Good afternoon, everyone. Thanks for coming on out to the Fremont Golf Club. Good to see you. And thanks for coming on out to listen to our conversation today about Husker football, whether we will have it or not. Good to see you. Hey, let's put your hands together for the golf club for having us out here today. Thank you so much for your staff. If you forget who we are, I'm Rich Ray from Big Dog Country, 98.9 FM and 1340 AM and Mix 105.5. We have Chris Walls, our general manager. Barry Rieger is with us. Dan is new. Dan is one of our salespeople as well, so we welcome him here with us here today. Before I turn things over to Sean here in just a little bit, I want to talk about a few things on our local sports scene. We do have local sports that are taking place, and we have some high school football coming up tomorrow night. Fremont High is in action at Bellevue East. That originally was supposed to be against Omaha Benson, but Omaha Public Schools opted out for fall sports, so Fremont threw a schedule together and had Bellevue East on it, and they play at Bellevue East tomorrow night. Fremont's 1-1, and that game's at 7 o'clock tomorrow on Big Dog Country. And then I'll be in Lincoln tomorrow, where Archbishop Bergen plays Lincoln Lutheran tomorrow in the 7 o'clock contest. And Bergen is 2-0 and look really, really sharp in their first two ball games that have taken place. And then coming up on Saturday, the Midland Warriors will begin their season as they will be taking on Dort University and the Defenders. And we thought, what better thing to do than bring out former Husker assistant coach and current Midland head football coach Jeff Jamrock to speak a little bit about the Midland Warriors. So if you'd welcome Jeff Jamrock, please.
Thanks, Rich. It's good to be here. I got 10 minutes, so I got my timer already starting right now. So when that thing goes off, I'm going to turn it over to Sean. Great to be here today. We're having a football season. How about that? Yeah. Got my mask here. It's been a crazy, whatever it's been. It seems like 2 years, but yeah. It's 6 months or whatever. We're excited about playing it. It's hard to believe this is our fifth football season, and time goes fast. It's been fun coaching our Midland Warriors, a lot of local kids. We got six guys on our football team from Fremont, five from Fremont High, one from Bergen. We got over 100 Nebraska kids on our football team. So if you want to come out and watch, local flavor. Real quick on the Fremont kids. Gage Harbaugh, long snapper, senior, great young man. Next one is, I'm going to lose my train of thought, Chase Lipsis, defensive lineman. Plays a lot of football for us and starts, had a great season last year. Christian Harmon led the country last year with 8 interceptions, very good football player. And then we have Jacob Johnson, who is from Fremont Bergen. And another guy we have, Dylan Core, backup defensive end for us. And then the last one, transfer from Kearney, big lineman. When I say big, about 320 pounds. His name's Jackson Richard, was All-State, played in Shrine Bowl, was homesick. I said, no better place to come back home than Fremont. There's only one problem with that. He has home cooking again. So instead of two meals a day, or two plates, sometimes he may take 3 or 4 plates. But anyhow, great young man. We're excited. We're picked third in our league. Morningside has been the national power. And then obviously the next team in our league is Northwestern. Last year, boy, that was a tough loss early in the season. We were beating them the whole game to a last second field goal. Last football season was probably one of the most rewarding I've had in coaching, just because we started out 1-3 and lost 3 games by 10 points. And it was we lost some of our best players, our best running back, best corner, best nose guard. We had multiple injuries to some really good football players, and we finished up on a 6-game winning streak. I don't think you have that unless you have a great culture. I think we have a very good culture here at Midland. Got some great coaches on our staff, a couple of former Huskers, Austin Rose. I actually recruited Austin to Nebraska as a running back, earned a scholarship, and then Zach Bowman is on our staff, who played for the Bears and Giants and Dolphins. Zach's been on our staff 2 years, and so winning those games last season gave us a lot of confidence. Like I said, we're on a 6-game winning streak. When we took over 4 years ago, there's 10 college football teams that play in this state. Midland would have been the worst. They won three games the previous two football seasons. I didn't know this till someone brought it to my attention. Obviously, we use it in recruiting, but we're the only school in the state in Nebraska. They're sending them to play. We're the only school in the last 4 years that have had a winning season, and we have the most wins of any school in the state. So appreciate it. Thanks. Hopefully we can get some of those other programs going. That's Sean's, He's in charge of getting Nebraska in. But I know they'll get it going down there. But we're just having fun. These are great young men when you come out and watch play. I've been at a lot of schools. The thing that probably impresses me the most about the young men in our program is so many of them have to work. Some of them work during the season. A lot of them work second semester. This summer, you know, guys, when we were at Nebraska, all they did was really train, and they may take a class in the summer. A lot of them just train. That's all they did. These guys are working 8, 10, 12-hour days, plus getting up. This year, we had workouts at 6 in the morning, 6:30, 7. We went groups of 10, and we had two strength coaches and some other coaches working it because of the social distancing. So it was a really interesting summer training these guys. The toughest part right now is we're making some decisions on who's playing and who maybe shouldn't be, all because of we reported on the 14th of August. So we haven't been going that long. And so there's some guys that we would already known had we had spring ball who would be a definite starter or who can we count on. And then, you know, knock on wood, we've been pretty good with this COVID situation. We did have a couple of guys have to quarantine for 14 days in the middle of fall camp. I just saw where Wisconsin's taking a two-week delay because they're hockey, and I guess there's a lot of fun social distancing things in Madison, Wisconsin. But so anyhow, it was a challenge on those guys are back now. We're at full strength right now, and knock on wood that we can continue on. So we're doing everything we can. So I have this orange mask on, and all our meetings, everything we do on the practice field, when they're not in there, they have their masks up, and hopefully we can get through this pandemic. Again, we're excited. I don't know what I'm doing with my time here. I guess I do got a couple minutes. I guess I'll take some questions, but again, we're excited about the football season. We have a lot of guys back from our football team a year ago. Really like our coaching staff. And like I said, the door come out 1 o'clock. I think they're not having tailgates this year. I think they do have, I think, out of the Anderson building in between, I think, 10:30 and 11, or 11:30 and 12:30, like a tailgate to go type of deal. But we've had great support here in Fremont. I see some familiar faces out in the crowd here. And I guess at this point, I'll take any questions they have about our program. Hopefully no COVID questions, because I'm about at it with COVID right now. You guys probably are too. Any questions you have about our program or first game?
Was it easy for the GPAC to play? I mean, we're seeing here, obviously, it's not been easy to play in the Big Ten. I mean, right. Why does it seem like it was so easy for the GPAC to get going?
I think that's a great question. It's probably a question for those higher-ups. I'm hoping that the GPAC, the SEC, ACC, and Big 12 maybe had some more information than anyone else, but I think they looked at the region, and there's some regions that aren't playing at NAI right now. We're one of them, and so I think they looked at, you know, the great part of our league is we play 1 o'clock games, and other than Jamestown, which is thank God we're not playing there this year, we did last year. Rich knows about that drive. And then our furthest one, we only have one overnight game this year, and that's playing Dakota Wesleyan, which is only a little over 3 hours away, 3.5, so it's not bad. So most of our schools are all localized, Sean, so I think they looked at it and said, hey, if the GPAC can take care of, you know, in their area, but there are some teams in the South and Southeast that, you know, have put off, you know, their football season to the spring. So it's a good question.
Once everything has happened, are the players, are they up to speed as much as they were in the years past, or are they behind right now, do you think, compared to years past?
They're probably a little behind. That's just natural, just because you didn't have those 15 practices right in the spring. And even this summer, we couldn't do some of the things that we'd like to just because of, you know, they wouldn't let us this summer. They wouldn't let us be out on the football field with the ball and do some things. And so a lot of it was player-led. I think you're still going to see a great product, but it's going to take a little while to get up to speed. And like I said, some other schools are having the same problem we are. There's some, from what I've heard, of maybe some guys that are out for a certain time being. And that's the biggest thing right now that we're finding and other schools are finding. It's that tracing. When it comes back to who was, I mean, you saw it all summer, right? Rutgers players have a party or whatever, and all of a sudden, whatever that amount is, and they didn't have masks on, it was more than 15 minutes, less than 6 feet away, you're going to sit out for 14 days. It doesn't matter how you feel. It's just certain protocol. Then you get tested and waiting for tests and how long that can take on some situations. And so That's what we're in. But we control, at least we're telling our guys, we control this environment. But you guys probably remember when you were 18 to 23 years old?
I don't want to.
I know. A lot of you don't want to remember those days. Some of you may want to. Regardless, that's pretty tough for that age group to keep talking about it. And then what do they do when they leave your premises? That's what we're finding. I've talked to some other college coaches. They're fine. It's not what they do on the campus down in Lincoln or the campus in, you know, in Fremont. It's what are they doing from those other hours of the day? Who comes in their house? And all those things. And again, if it's over 15 minutes and all those different things that the CDC says, that's right. What you're dealing with. Anyone else?
You say strength on offense, strength on defense. Is there somebody that, when you think of your team, wow, this guy really sticks out?
Yeah, good question. On offense is probably our skill positions. Austin Harris, the kid out of Millard West, was a second-team All-American. Darren Gentry, a wide receivers all-conference 2 years ago, thought he was going to go to the NBA in basketball. Turned out the NBA didn't call him up like we thought. I knew it wasn't going to happen, but some kids think that it's going to happen. He's a really good athlete, but he's back on our football team right now. Dalton Tremaine, who broke his ankle, one of our best football players, great young man, 4.0 GPA, is back at full strength. Quarterbacks, we may play too early. One's kind of a Tebow type where he's 6'3", 220, and very physical and can run and throw it. And the other one's more, you know, just, I don't know, kind of a Brett Favre type. He's like a gunslinger. Actually, I do call him a gunslinger. He's a good football player, so there's my 10 minutes. And then on defense, he was all conference last year. Here's a guy I would have taken as a walk-on in Nebraska because I believe he could play down there eventually. His name's Trevor Halvich from East Butler. He was an all-state football player, about 6'3", came to us about 225, 230. He led our team last year in tackles, had like 12 sacks. He's a heck of a football player. He's up to 245 now and runs close to one of our fastest 10s on the football team. I mean, he is like a really gifted player. Christian Harmon, the young man out of Fremont, led the country with 8 interceptions last year. He missed the opening 2 games, right? Because he worked at the Move, the baseball? Right? Yeah. Well, afterwards, right, they were having some fun, and I go, what? He goes, called me up, he goes, Coach, I broke my thumb, it went through the fence. I go, what the heck happened? He goes, oh, we were having fun after the game, and, you know, kind of a touch football type, and I'm a competitive guy, and this guy threw a really bad football and went into the fence and, like, ripped his thumb and had surgery. So he still led the country with 8 interceptions. So I told him, the Move, no more games at night. Okay, your baseball, So anyone else? All right, I'll turn it over to Rich. Thanks a lot, and go Warriors. Thank you.
Thanks, Jeff. Thank you. There's one house where I know where a bunch of the Midland football players live, and I know why they're getting bulked up, because they're DoorDash and just left and right. I know exactly what they're eating. So, very good. We appreciate Coach Jamrock coming out here today. 1 o'clock on Saturday, they play Dort, and you can hear the broadcast on Big Dog Country, or come on out to Heaton Field and watch it as well. So it should be a lot of fun. All right, let's find out what is happening and what is not happening with Husker football. Please welcome Sean Callahan from HuskerOnline.com.
All right, thank you very much. Yeah, it's great to be here. It's been obviously a very different off season for all of us. We're just kind of keeping tabs on
What's going on. Scoot up a little bit, okay.
With what's going on, and you know, this is really the first talk I've given, and I've got a lot to say and a lot of stuff I could share. So I'm going to try to give you guys a pretty good feel of what's all happened since March. And you know, it was interesting back in March when all this went down with the COVID, and when it started, Nebraska had just finished 2 spring practices, and I think everybody was wrestling with, like, well, are we going to keep going and or whatnot? Then, you know, then it all shut down at that point, and everybody was sent home. And Coach Frost at that point goes, you know, this may not actually be a smart thing to do. We're going to send all these kids back home, and then eventually we're going to bring them all back. So, you know, getting all these kids back on campus is going to be a chore to manage the testing and the protocols and the virus. But they started working on that right away. There were about 40 guys that never left Lincoln, and they stayed in town. They found a place that they could go that was secure, and they worked out and they paid to work out there and train. So you had a group of guys that did a lot on their own, never left Lincoln the entire summer, the entire off season. And then, you know, by about April 30th, 98% of the players were back in town. And there was no team in the country that was going to that level. And what Nebraska did from the get-go is they did establish a partnership with UNMC. And that was smart on their end. And they figured out a way, a testing protocol, where when the kids got back into town, they were bringing them in small groups of 10 to 15 at a time, quarantining them, testing them, getting them back in one place. And it was set up even as a drive-through testing thing where they would drive into the Old South Stadium, Memorial Stadium. They would test all the guys one by one, wait until their test clears before they're able to get back into it. So they had a well-thought-out process how to bring their team back onto campus and to kind of, you know, do what they could do. Now, the NCAA and the Big Ten didn't allow you in a school weight room until June 1st. So the kids that got here in April, they still had to go work out at another place, which the coaches could not be there. But there was a trainer I know that worked with kids there, and they did a lot of, they did basically the workouts they were supposed to do, just with masks on in a different place. But there was no team in the country doing that. You know, Nebraska was so much further ahead than just about everybody in that front, especially the Big Ten Conference. So you can sense why they're pretty angry right now. I mean, they were like, we got to create an edge. We got to figure out a way to do this the right way and get an edge on our competition and train and do it safely. And they did. I mean, if they were to play a game, if they would have played September 5th at Rutgers, like it was scheduled on that initial 10-game schedule, I think Nebraska would have won the game by 50 points because they would have been that much further ahead than Rutgers, who didn't have really that opportunity to train and get ready. So that was really frustrating. But June 1, they started to get back into the weight room, and they were able to go day one. And to my knowledge, they were really the only team that started day one like that in the weight room on June 1st, because most other teams just started their testing, just started their quarantining on that day. And it took a good 2 weeks to get through all of that. And the mistake they made is they brought all 50 or 100 guys back at one time. And then that's when you can potentially get outbreaks, when you have too many kids together at one time that you haven't been able to properly test and whatnot. So they had a really good system that got the team back here and trained up. They had minimal COVID problems over the course of the summer. They had some positives. You know, they haven't publicly released that all the time. They did, I think 10 or 15 is what they said. But I think they're in the stance of, you know what, we're not going to release every time we have a positive case, because the media and social media just overreact over one or two cases. And it's just, you know, you're seeing more and more teams do that. And it does fall under medical privacy in that sense. But they kept the team working out. They were ready to go. But there was always this sense of, you know, they didn't know for sure if they were going to play. And I think Kevin Warren, from the get-go, you just didn't have a very good feel about him, the way he's kind of handled and managed this situation over the course of the summer. I think a lot of the coaches in the league didn't really know where it was going, and they did start practicing, going through fall camp. They went through mini camps before that. So, you know, they were getting ready to go, but they still didn't really know the schedule. And then finally, the Big Ten, as we know, released that schedule on Wednesday of that week, or Tuesday or Wednesday, and then by the next week, 5 days later, they pulled the plug on the season. And what happened was, on Saturday morning, Kevin Warren told the athletic directors, hey, you know, we've got some medical information. He held separate medical conference meetings with the 14 representatives from each Big Ten school. These medical representatives expressed maybe they had some concerns with testing turnaround results. There was talk about myocarditis on that call as well. And Kevin Warren then relayed that to the athletic directors and the presidents in separate meetings, and basically to the point where he convinced the presidents from that information that they don't think it's safe to play. So that's kind of what led to the presidents voting 5 days after the schedule was released. And the one thing that was different about the process was Warren never had the presidents talk to the medical people. He never had the athletic directors. They were all on separate Zoom meetings over the course. And like Bill Moose said, he goes, we had 120 2-hour Zoom meetings with athletic directors. They literally meet 5, sometimes 6 days a week, 2 days a week, or 2 hours a day on these Zooms, and they put a lot of thought, a lot of plan into the process, and he goes, it was all thrown out the window in one day. And that was the most frustrating thing, that the athletic directors and the coaches and the presidents and the medical people, they never all talked as a group. Kevin Warren kind of controlled the information from group to group to group. And then he kind of controlled what he wanted to control by telling a few selected national media people to control the narrative on what was being put out there, to kind of drive what he thought needed to be the story. So it got to be pretty frustrating. And now I think there's a lot of pushback behind the scenes to try to play football. And, you know, I think the Big Ten was hoping everybody would just give up, turn the page, and accept the plan. But I got news for you. Nebraska and Ohio State particularly have not given up. And, you know, that's when I look at the lawsuit that Nebraska's players have filed with Mike Flood, I'm not saying they're going to win or I don't know what's going to come out of it. But I think the biggest thing is it's kept the pressure on. It's put the Big Ten in a really, really awkward spot. It's, you know, put them in a position where the ball still remains in play. And now Ohio State is rumored to be filing another major lawsuit towards the conference where they might sue individual schools. Tom Mars, a renowned sports lawyer, who's done a lot of different sports cases. I've been talking to him a little bit, talked to him last night, and he's working on multiple cases as well where he might sue 11 different Big Ten schools himself for this. And the Freedom of Information Act, where they're trying to get, was there a vote, was there not a vote? So it's a mess. And what it comes down to is I think there are definitely Big Ten schools that don't want to play, and there are schools that want to play. I don't know if they'll ever get to 9 votes to overturn it, but I truly would not be surprised if you saw a group of Big Ten teams just move forward and play and dare the conference to kick them out of the league. I mean, I'm not saying it's going to happen, but it wouldn't surprise me if it happened. Because
join the GPAC.
Well, like, let's just say Ohio State and Nebraska, if they play October football, 4 games against non-conference opponents, is the Big Ten going to kick Ohio State out? I don't think so. I mean, they're worth a huge chunk of money to this league. So I think it's going to get interesting, because I do think Ohio State particularly is going to make their move here very soon. And Nebraska's thing is still going on. There's a rumored president's vote that's supposed to take place by Sunday or Monday. Will that happen? It's hard to say, because we've been hearing about a vote for the last 10 days and it hasn't happened yet. And the president's vote separately. So Ronnie Green is on that for Nebraska. The leader of each campus is on the Council of Presidents and Chancellors. They control the Big Ten. Kevin Warren reports to them. So they're essentially the 14 chairman of the board that Kevin Warren reports to as the CEO in business terms. So the presidents make that call, and you've got presidents that don't want to play, and that's a challenge. When the Michigan president doesn't want to play, but you got coaches that don't want to play. I look at Jeff Brohm at Purdue. He doesn't want to play. PJ Fleck doesn't want to play. And I think some of these guys don't want to play because they haven't had their teams prepared like Nebraska and Ohio State. They know that if they played in a month, they wouldn't look very good. And a 10-game conference only scheduled, Purdue might go 2-8. And, you know, for Jeff Brohm, he's like, you know what, I got Bob Diaco as my new defensive coordinator. We know what year one of Bob Diaco looks like. And we haven't had a spring to get ourselves ready with Bob Diaco. I just lost Rondell Moore. Playing in the winter or whatever the proposed season is, that's better for us, so that's what we want to do. And you know what, we don't recruit rivals top 250 or 100 recruits very often. We'll get the same 3-star kid that we get anyway, so this won't affect our recruiting because we don't recruit the same kid Ohio State recruits. So I think there's a faction of middle or lower class Big Ten teams that it doesn't matter to them either way, and they know that if they do play, they're not going to be ready at the level they maybe are comfortable with. So I think that's been a driving force, because not every state has been as good as Nebraska. I mean, Governor Ricketts loosened guidelines and restrictions on June 1st right away, where Nebraska could have 50% capacity in that weight room, which, you know, that's a lot of people in that weight room, the size of that weight room, where there, you know, initially people were still battling with 10 people at a time or whatnot. And we had really good guidelines that allowed Nebraska to kind of move forward through the pandemic and get themselves ready to go. The other big thing is testing. You know, so the Pac-12 last week announced that they have signed a deal with a rapid testing program. They would like to join forces with the Big Ten and play a November to February, March season with the winners meeting in the Rose Bowl. They've made that clear at this point. The question I have is, why doesn't the Big Ten have a rapid testing program in place? President Trump has said that they will give the Big Ten what they need. I was on the phone with somebody today that be on the lookout. Evidently, Trump speaks in Michigan, and he's going to let people know that he's given the Big Ten these tests and they haven't used them. So why is that? You know, it's mind-boggling to me that Central Arkansas, is able to have rapid testing, but a Big Ten school can't. Sipple and I were joking. He goes, "That's like Casey's General Store being smarter with their medical protocols than, you know, a prestigious Fortune 500 company." You know, why is a small, borderline Division II school ahead of the Big Ten on this right now? You know, when you look at the testing protocols in place, because rapid testing, what that would do is you could get immediate daily results at like $5 a test. And then by doing that, you eliminate the dreaded contact tracing. And contact tracing is what knocks out entire high school football teams for 10 to 14 days. Creighton Prep's out for 2 weeks. Kearney's out for 2 weeks right now. Because of one kid without a mask, it shuts the whole thing down at that point. So that's why this rapid testing is big, because contact tracing is a pain in the you know what, and it's impossible to manage. And nobody likes what happens when you have to shut down 10 to 14 days. So that will be something to watch. But Nebraska's practicing. They have had four practices this week. So you tell me what that means. I mean, you're not practicing 4 days this week if you don't feel good about being on a football field in October. When I called someone today, they're on the field right now. So they can't wear shoulder pads. That's the only downfall. They're restricted to what's called a 12-hour week, so they can have 5 hours of practice with helmets and protective spider pads on. So they can go 4 days a week at an hour and 15 minutes of scripted practice time. Now, there can be some beginning and ending that's not part of the script. Then they can do 5 hours in a weight room and 2 hours in a meeting room. So that's how they break out a 12-hour week, and it's more than 12 hours, but on paper it's 12 hours. Now, the teams that are playing football can do 20 hours right now a week. So they can practice for two and a half full hours a day. That's the one, and they can wear shoulder pads. So that's the, you know, the minute Nebraska gets a game scheduled, they could go into a 20-hour week, and that will be something to watch. Because if the Big Ten doesn't move forward with something, like I said, I would not be surprised if Ohio State and Nebraska just moved forward with something on their own and just tried to play games and challenge the Big Ten here and the authority and the damage that they've done to this conference by digging in their heels and, you know, making the wrong decision. Let's call it what it is. All the Big Ten had to do was say, all right, we're delaying the start of the season from September 5th to September 26th, 21 more days. And we would be sitting here getting ready for a game on September 26th. Instead, they got stubborn, they got egos, they got political, and this is where we're at today with all the different variables that have played a factor in this decision to not have a scheduled football season. And now we're seeing, you know, every school is gonna lose $100 million. I mean, we're looking at a $1.5 billion loss at the 14 schools combined on paper. And, you know, Nebraska, In the spring, they laid off 17 people. They've furloughed 51 more, and then everybody else took a 10% pay cut. Thankfully, they have not had to cut any sports. Iowa, as we know, has cut sports already. But every single school is forecasting $100 million to $120, $30 million type hit to their overall budget, just because they don't know about volleyball. They don't know about basketball, the other revenue sports that bring in money and fans. They don't know about the TV money at this point, what's gonna happen with the revenue on the TV contract. So there's a lot of unknowns, and I can tell you when they have these coaches Zoom meetings on Thursdays, There's a lot of yelling, there's a lot of cussing, and there's a lot of screaming going on with Big Ten coaches. It is a very divided conference right now, with coaches and administrators and presidents on how this situation should be handled. So with that, I'll take some questions.
How difficult is it to schedule some games?
It would not be. If they want to play football games in October that aren't Big Ten football games, there are teams lining up to play. Because anybody that's in Conference USA, the Sun Belt, or the American, there are six leagues playing. Those are the three non-Power 5 leagues that are playing. All of those teams want money, and they're not making the normal money they make. So if you said, come play us for $1 million, you'll have a line out the door of teams that need that $1 million. So it would be easy to find games. And I have no doubt some of those conversations behind the scenes have happened to play games if it got to that, to play October football games.
So hearing you, basically you're saying when they vote on Sunday, Monday, you think it's going to be pretty, because it has to be 60%, which is 9 teams of 14. That's going to be tough to do then.
Yeah, and if they vote, it means they have the votes. I mean, the way I understand it, I don't know if they're going to re-vote again to not play. I think if
did they ever vote?
That's what we don't know. Yeah, did they ever vote? Ronnie Green has said they have, but, you know, I think it was one of those things where they knew what it was. You know, they knew who the three were that wanted it, and maybe it didn't go into a formal vote, but they knew collectively that this was the number. So that's the sticky situation there, that whether it was a true vote or not, but I think we know that there were three for sure. One that surprised, like Wisconsin, like they evidently don't want to play right now. And you just heard today that they shut down for 2 weeks. So they're going to be out until September 23rd. Then you're going to bring kids back in and have to retest and re-quarantine. So Wisconsin won't be ready to play a football game in October. It'll be very difficult for them to play. That's the challenge you face in this league right now. And when they sent kids away, even at Nebraska, for 10, 14 days when classes started, Frost said, guys, go be students. Just be regular students and go to class and go home, do what you got to do. I mean, it brought back positive results on tests. And it kind of solidified what they thought all along. The protocols and the structure of the football program was protecting these kids. But once they sent them out into the general population, you know, it brought in a lot of positive tests. And I think UNL the last couple of weeks has averaged about 180 positive tests per week. So it's high, but I think it's going to hopefully start to go back down in the next week or two.
What happened to know if the Big Ten commissioner and the Pac-12 commissioner have history? They seem to work in concert.
Well, the question was, Big Ten and Pac-12, do they have history?
Commissioners.
I don't think so. Kevin, this is Kevin Warren's first job ever in college football. He was an attorney and worked in other areas of football, but he had never worked in college football. So I don't think they have a history, but I just think the Rose Bowl is the connection. And the Rose Bowl, as we know, is a big, big part of the two leagues. And you know, I think in their eyes, like, hey, let's try to salvage the Rose Bowl and play a Rose Bowl in March or April. That's kind of what they're thinking at this point. And I think that's if Kevin Warren had his druthers, we would probably play a Thanksgiving to March schedule with 10 games. There's two plans I've heard. One would be start on Thanksgiving. You play 10 games with time off around Christmas. You'd have a championship game in early March, and then a Rose Bowl to follow. And then the other plan would be starting like December 29th after Christmas, and you would play 8 games with a March championship game and a Rose Bowl to follow. So those were the two Barry Alvarez plans that he proposed to the coaches. Barry is in charge of this return to play committee. Some of the things I've heard about those plans were there would be a lot of weeknight games. So like the opening week, there might be 7 games that would play each night of the week. One night of the week, there'd be a game on. And they would try to capture and maximize the revenue. And odds are these would be empty domes in Minneapolis and Indianapolis. there's one more in there, Detroit. So it wouldn't look good. I mean, I don't know about you guys, but I try to watch those NBA games. I just can't get excited to watch NBA games with empty gyms and without the crowd element. And that's what these games would be as well. It just wouldn't feel the same, especially knowing you're not playing for a national championship or a New Year's Six Day Bowl spot, some of the things that really matter. And then you're going to lose a lot of players. I mean, it's going to be an exodus of players that are NFL guys that won't play in the spring season. Now, luckily for Nebraska, Brandon Hymus might be the only guy we'd lose. I mean, I think everybody else would come back to play in this proposed second season. But fingers crossed that they work out some sort of plan. And I think for Ohio State, their goal is to play eight games and get eight games in so they can be a part of the playoff discussion. I think you have to get eight in. And then if you prove that, you can be in the college football playoff at that point. So we'll see. And that's why I think starting in October is so important, because there are, I'm trying to think, if you started October 17th, that's three October Saturdays and then four November Saturdays, and then you'd have two in December. So you could play eight games with a bye week and have a December 19th Big Ten title game if you started October 17th. So that's why October 17th has been thrown out there as a possibility. So we'll kind of see where that goes and if they can even vote on that, if there's enough support to vote on that. But I'm not optimistic that, to get nine votes right now, it's going to be very difficult.
On a national scale, you're talking about the, teams playing for a national championship and all, with everything kind of being moved to the spring from that perspective. You're starting to see a lot of athletes now that if they're playing like in a January bowl game, that they're for passing that to go get ready for the NFL draft. If that gets pushed more and we're seeing playoffs that are being into the spring, are you going to see kind of a watered down version of what the postseason could be like as far as a national scale is concerned? And what do you think is going to happen?
Well, the college football playoff is going to stay in January as far as I know. I mean, unless like stuff got canceled, but it shouldn't, because the rapid testing would ideally be in full effect here very soon. I mean, I can tell you Nebraska is securing or working on securing a rapid testing deal as we speak on their own. I mean, the Big Ten is supposed to be doing it for everybody, but they don't trust the Big Ten to get this done. And they can get it done in one phone call and be done with it. And the Big Ten can't, for whatever odd reason, or the communication. And I just read a comment from James Franklin. He goes, literally, since they told us we weren't playing, we've had zero communication from the Big Ten office, zero. And so it's a joke. I mean, when you look at how this league is being ran and how embarrassing it is for the brand of this league, and now, when we got in this league, it was supposed to be the drama-free, prestigious conference, and there's more drama right now than we ever saw with Texas in the Big 12. I mean, this makes Texas look like nothing. Back some of the stunts they're pulling, I mean, no one ever stopped us from playing football like this before. I mean, it's really remarkable, how far this has gone.